a small crowd. This is the smallest one we've ever had. Very, very small. A lot of people are in trouble. When I was a little kid, I got very into baseball cards. I was very, very into baseball cards. So it wasn't only baseball cards. It was basketball cards, football cards, whatever it was. But basketball cards, I think, were my favorites, and I still have a lot of them. My collection of Michael Jordans that I hope will eventually give me enough to retire. But I was still into baseball cards. I don't know how much I spent, but I spent a lot of money. And I always thought it was like an investment. You know, you get something back, and I always get something back. So when my kids came up to me on Monday, and they said, "Grandma bought us a pack of baseball cards." So I was like, "Oh, very cute. Starting it all over again." So she got, but it wasn't a regular pack of baseball cards. I don't know if anybody knows. If you don't know yet, the year is 2009. She gave them a pack of 1990 Donruss cards. If anybody remembers Donruss, there's Topps, there's Upper Deck, there's Bowman, you know, there's Fleer. This was a Donruss card. And it was a pack from 1990. It was one of those things that you save for years and years and years. And apparently she had found it, and she gave it over to my kids. So she gave it to them. They opened it up, and they were playing with these cards. So I was very excited. I'm like, "Show me the cards." Because I wanted to see, like, I still remember 1990, almost a year after the Cubs made the playoffs. It's still probably Mitch Williams or somebody there, you know, I would know. So I was like, I was really happy. I decided to start looking through. What did I find? I found a Ken Griffey Jr. Ken Griffey Jr. was a rookie in 1989, which means his 1990 card is his rookie card. So I look at it, and I say, "Oh my gosh, this is a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card. You got it in a pack, in a regular pack. This is for sure worth hundreds of dollars. There's no question it's worth $100. So I pulled it out. I'm like, guys, we're going to save this. I got from one of my, you know, one of those hard things that you put the baseball cards into. I forgot what it's called, the little thing. I still have them because I got my Michael Jordans in the house. I pulled it out. I put the thing inside there. And I said, "Okay, I'm going to look it up later, guys." I put them to sleep and everything. And I, like, ran downstairs, ran to the computer. And I Googled, on the computer, I Googled, Ken Griffey Jr., Donruss, 1990. You know, the little commas and everything. You know, to figure out, what would it be? So I found out, I went up, led me to a place. How much? It was a question. How much is a Donruss 1990 Ken Griffey Jr. card? Asked in March 2009. So I said, "Oh, great, this is exactly what I want." Looked it up, and it said 75 cents. And I sat there, and I thought to myself, I saved a card for 19 years, and I got 75 cents off it? Oh, what happened? I remember when if you had a card from the 70s, when I was in 1990, if you had a card from the 70s, you were like the richest kid ever. There's nothing to talk about. If you had like a Mickey Mantle, or you were, well, Mickey Mantle's a little earlier. If you had like a Willie Mays, or you had something like that, you had a Roberto Clemente, even if you had like a Bobby Bonds. You know, without the drugs, you'd be making hundreds of dollars off it. You go to a card show and you see, even then I remember every Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card was hundreds of dollars, hundreds. And now 75 cents? You couldn't imagine my disappointment. You couldn't imagine it. I'm staring at the screen, I'm like, it can't be. I'm pleading, I'm like, please be wrong. It must mean $7,500. That's what it must mean. The .00 is really it's a comma, and they're missing a zero. And there's no way. It can't be. I was so upset. I couldn't think straight. That's how upset I was. And it hit me. It didn't hit me then. It hit me later on that night when I was telling Rachel about it, and she was laughing at me. It hit me later on that there's a big Moser Haskel in this. A gift that a Kaddish Baruch Hu can give you can also be an onesh. It could be a tremendous onesh. I have no idea what I did to deserve that heartache. But I got it. And it was a real heartache. It wasn't a fake. It wasn't. I felt bad. I was like, I ruined my day. I don't know if you saw me on Monday, but when I came to Night Sitter, I was like dragging my feet, walking in. It's just, it felt horrible. I really felt it as something terrible. Something absolutely terrible. That can be an onesh. That could be a real onesh. You don't realize how much of an onesh that could possibly be. Oh, yeah, I can't. I don't need to even go into the lottery winners. Those people that win the lottery and then afterwards say, "Worst thing that ever happened to me. Worst thing that ever happened to me." I mean, the amount of fame that a certain person by the last name of Tyson has had with throughout his life, who now, have you seen him? He's gained about 300 pounds, and he's just this big blob. He's Jabba the Hutt from old Star Wars. That's what he looks like. And we're talking about he's all the money he had, he used to buy Cadillacs and Rolls Royces for his friends. His friends are gone. His friends are gone. They're all gone. He's got nothing. And he said he laments himself all the time. I can't believe what I did to myself. I can't believe how I destroyed myself. What a life. What are all these people that you hear, they won millions of dollars, they did this, they did that, and they would have been better off without the money in the first place. Where a reward is something that you look at and you think, this is the best thing that ever happened to me, can turn out to be an onus. Turn out to be one of the worst things that's ever happened to you. Let's say you find $1,000 in the street, right? Find $1,000 in the street. It doesn't look like there's a sinner. Let's say it's $10,000. $10,000 all with rubber bands all around it. You think to yourself, there's no simon. You find it, there's no simon. It's in the street. Rove, let's say it's not in front of Skokie Yeshiva, it's three blocks down that way. Rove Akum. So it's mutter to keep. And then as you're picking it up, somebody who's not Jewish, there's no mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, somebody who's not Jewish comes up to you and says to you, did you happen to find $10,000 on the street? It was in rubber bands, and it happens to be that inside two of the rubber bands that are all attached to one another, it says my name. You just missed the simon. So you're upset. You give it back to him, but you're upset. And it's not even a mitzvah. It's no mitzvah. You get no mitzvah of a Shavuot Aveda for it. You did a nice thing. You did a nice thing. Good, you're a nice guy. But you get upset. But why? 5 seconds earlier, you were fine. You were walking down the street. You're whistling. You're happy and everything. And then you trip over this $10,000 in cash that's sitting on the ground. All of a sudden, you realize you're not going to be able to keep it and you get upset. Over what? 5 seconds ago, you didn't care. That didn't matter to you. That didn't do anything to you. Because why? There was a chance. There was that second where I had that chance where I thought I was going to get something. One of the worst stories in my family history. One of the worst. I don't know if you know my brothers. I have a lot of them. My second oldest brother is Rafi. Rafi's absolutely hilarious in his quest to become the richest man in the world. Absolutely. There's nothing funnier than Rafi. He's all into, he's not into money, he doesn't care. But he always says like he buys lottery tickets and he's always like, tell me the winning lottery numbers. And I say, I wish I could be that Hasidic Yid, but I don't know. And every single time he begs and begs and begs, I can never get him. He can't get him to stop. So I have another brother, Renan. Renan is a practical joker to the extreme. He takes everything to the extreme and he does great practical jokes. So he bought at a joke shop one of those lottery things, one of those, you know, you scratch and win things, that is a winner. But it wasn't a real scratch and win. So he bought it at a joke shop, and, you know, he gave it to Rafi, and he said, you know, Rafi, remember that time? And he bought another real one, you know, this is whatever. And he said, Rafi, remember that time that you lent me $2? So I happened to be a jewel. I decided to get you two cards instead of the $2. So here you go. So he gave it over to Rafi. And Rafi's like, okay, fine. So immediately he starts scratching, because that's the way Rafi is. He immediately starts scratching it off. He does the one from Jewel first, and he wins like a free ticket. He gets something, whatever it is. And he's like, one for one. And then he takes out the other one, starts scratching it, and he says, gets the $10,000. And then all of a sudden, it's $10,000. And he gets all three. And he's like, oh my gosh! Oh my gosh, now I don't know how he didn't notice that all of us were standing around him at the time. Like, you know, every single one of them, everybody was there, like, looking at him. You know, but either way, he started screaming. He's like, oh my gosh, I got it! I got the $10,000! I got it! And my dad came by. My dad was also in on the joke. It would have been funnier if he wasn't. And he said, what? There's no way. And he said, let me see this. And then he tears it in half. And Rafa's like, what are you doing? And he said, Rafi, come on. There's no way this could be real. Rafi, it's real. It's real. And Renan is standing by the door. And he says, uh-oh. He took it a little too far. And then Rafi looks at Renan. Renan looks at Rafi. And Rafi looks at him and says, I'm going to kill you. And Renan didn't have shoes on. And Rafi literally chased him a mile and a half. around Chicago, going and chasing after him. They go find, he wanted to kill him. And Renan's running around, he's just like, I just had socks on. And we were running around with a camera, going around, we have pictures of it, of the whole thing, going around, famous story. It just hits you. The $10,000 wasn't there. He had it for a second, and look how angry he got afterward when he realized that it wasn't true. Go angry, guy. Yeah, it's rough. Okay, you got pulled. So that's the main reason why. If you don't realize, it hits you. You have it for 1 second, and you think to yourself, that unbelievable. It's a gift, but it's really, it can be, it's just an onish. It's just an onish from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want you to be able to keep that gift. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't feel, he gave the onish in a form of a gift, in the form of something tov, but it never ended up being tov. I'm going to tell you a story with Reb Zisya. The only person who heard it here was Ari Reich. He was there last night at the shir. It was a shir that I gave. This is an unbelievable story. And it hits, it's the third time I've read it. It's an unbelievable story of Reb Zisya Manipoli. I don't know if you know Reb Zisya Manipoli. Reb Zisya Manipoli is a person beyond this world. He doesn't belong in this world. He had no shaifas to Olam Haza. Absolutely no shaifas. He sat and he learned all day long. His wife and kids were in absolute, the worst poverty you can imagine. But he wasn't in this world. He couldn't think about things. He barely ate, he barely drank, he basically did nothing. He fasted week to week. He mamish had nothing to do with this world. The only times he ate was tiny little bits. It was just, his Rebbe was the Magid of Mezrich. And Reb Zusya from Manipoli, he had daughters that were getting older. So his wife said to him, Reb Zusya, you gotta, I don't know if she called him Reb, you have to go to the Magid. You gotta go ask him for help. You're not making it. We're not doing it. We need to, our daughters to marry Talmid Chacham, and we just don't have it. So Zisya said, how can I go to the Magid of Mezrich and bring them down to Olam Hazeh, bring them down into this world and ask them for money? His head is in the spheres. His head is up there in Olam Haba. Oh, I have to bring them down into this world? I can't do that. How could I do that? Zisya's wife said, if you don't do it, then I'm going to do it. Reb Zisya said, Gesundheit. You want to do it, go ahead. Reb Zisya's wife went to the Magid of Mezrich and said to him, this is what's happening over here. Reb Zisya just doesn't care. He's not doing anything. And the Magid of Mezrich said, that sounds like my Reb Zisya. I'll take care of him the next time he comes in. So Reb Zisya's wife went back. Reb Zisya eventually felt the need to go see the Magid of Mezrich. Something happened and he felt that he had to go see the Magid. And he used to go weeks or whatever it is. And he decided he was going to go back. Went back to the Magid of Mezrich. And the Magid, you know, spoke to him, learning this and that and the other. And two days passed. Reb Zisya said, okay, I'm going to go home now. I'm going to go back now. So he went to go get his preda from the Magid of Mezrich to go say goodbye. And the Magid looks at him and says, and what's with your daughters? And Reb Zisya says, Nunu. So the Magid said to him, what do you mean, Nunu? Are they ready to get married? So Reb Zisya said, yes. He said, do you have money for them to get married? Reb Zisya said, no. So the Magid of Mezrich started blasting him. How could you do this? How can you not care about your family? How can you not care about your daughters? And Reb Zisya started to cry. But the Magid of Mezrich knew Reb Zisya way too well. And he looked at him and said, you're not crying about your family, about my Moser. And Reb Zisya shook his head, no. He said, you're crying because you brought me back down to Olam Hazeh. You took me out of the upper spheres of Olam Haba and you brought me into Olam Haza. That's why you're crying, isn't it? Because you feel that you brought me down too low into this world. He just said, nodded his head, yes. As he was crying, the Magid of Mezrich said, listen to me. Opened his drawer, took out 300 rubles, gave it over to Reb Zisya, said to Reb Zisya, take these 300 rubles, go marry off your daughters. And Reb Zisya didn't want to take it. He said, no. The Magid said, take it. And Reb Zisya never argued with anything the Magid of Mezrich ever said. Took the money, put it in his pocket. As he's walking home, he sees a crowd. And that crowd outside of Manipoli, somewhere around there, he saw a crowd. And Reb Zisya goes to everybody and he sees that there's a woman in the middle that's crying. So he goes up to the people around there and says, what's going on? What's happening? They said, oh, it's such a sad story. This woman is an almana. She's a widow. Her husband died years ago. She's been saving money. But little by little by little, she's been saving one little bit after another little bit in order to marry off her only daughter, to marry her off to a Talmid Chacham. She's been saving for years. And she saved up 300 rubles. And she came here to marry her daughter off to somebody that they had been set up with before. And on the way here, she doesn't know how. She lost the money. She doesn't know what happened to 300 rubles. It's all gone. Everything's completely gone. And now the future husband doesn't know what to do. His Rebbe told him not to get married because, well, how is he going to live? He's going to live in abject poverty for the rest of his life. They don't know what to do. And everybody's sad. They started collecting for him. So Reb Zisi looks at them and says, I found 300 rubles. I found 300 rubles. He goes up to the woman. Do you have a siman? Is there a way to tell? Can you tell me what you lost at 300 rubles? And she said, yes. It was a purple handkerchief. And he said, oh, do you know the denominations? Do you know how the dollars went? And she said, yes, I do. She said, it was this and that and the other. So Reb Zisi said, I found it. I got the money. I left it at my inn. Let me go back to my inn. I'll go grab my money satchel. I'll go grab it and I'll bring it back here. So Reb Zisi obviously didn't have to go to the inn. He went straight to the marketplace. He bought a purple handkerchief. He exchanged the money that he had for the denominations the woman had said, tied it up in the purple handkerchief, tied it up together, and then brought it back to the woman and said, here it is. And everybody's clapping on the back. They're saying, wow, what a tzaddik. You're such a great person. And they started going around. They didn't know who he was. You're such a great person. I've never seen such a tzaddik. Hashem Zaveda, such a mitzvah. Rav Zisi says, okay, here's the money. He starts handing out the money. And everybody's counting with them. 100, 200, 250. It's like a game show. Everybody's doing it together. And then, when they got to 270, Reb Zisi took the last 30 rubles and he put it in his pocket. So he looks at him and says, what are you doing? He said, well, I think I deserve 30 rubles as a reward for returning these 300 rubles. A 10%. I don't think that's so bad. I get back 10%. I get to keep 10% of the money that I found. So people started looking at him and said, good joke. That's really funny. No, seriously, give back the 30 rubles. So Reb Zisi looked at him and said, no, I don't want to give back the 30 rubles. I really think that I deserve it. I found this on the ground. I think I should keep this for myself. So people started looking and started getting a little angry. What do you mean you're going to keep the 30 rubles for yourself? It's her money. It's not your money. It's the mitzvah of Hashem Zaveda. You got to return everything. And Reb Zisi said, I feel that I should keep it for myself. So the people started screaming at him. The butcher gets up there, this huge guy wants to grab Reb Zisi and shake out the money from his pockets to be able to give it back to the woman. This just doesn't flinch. They say, wait, we have a Rav. Let's go bring him to the Rav. They grab Reb Zisi and they carry him over, they throw him over to the Rav, they bring him in front of the Rav, and they say, listen to what this guy did. Rav says, in the mitzvah of Hashem Zaveda, you have to return all the money. Reb Zisi said, who says, why can't I keep a reward? So the Rav started yelling at him, what kind of a person are you? How can you take away money from an almana and a yesoma? Somebody's going to get married, you're going to take 30 rubles from them. And eventually, when Reb Zisi was proven that it was the halacha, that he had to give back the 30 rubles, he gave back the 30 rubles. The Rav of the city was just sitting there dumbfounded. What in the world is going on here? And he knew Reb Zisi. He knew he was that guy that sat in the back of the Magen of Ezrich's shul. He was also a chassid of the Magen of Mezrich. And he said, he's that guy who's back there. And he's very close with the Magen of Mezrich. The Magen, he has a Talmud who's such a Rasha. So the guy went straight to the Rav, went straight to the Magen of Mezrich. Straight to the Magen of Mezrich. And said to the Magen, you've got to hear what your Talmud just did. What this man just did. The Magen looks at him and says, Oy, Reb Zisi. Oy, Reb Zisi. He didn't find the 300 rubles. That was the 300 rubles that I gave him out of my desk. He pretended it was the 300 rubles of that woman. The Rav sits there and says, oh, such a tzaddik. I made fun of such a tzaddik. I gave most of it such a tzaddik. But then he thinks to himself and he says, then why do you want to keep the last 30 rubles? Why did he put that in his pocket? Why did he make himself into a Rasha? The Magid looks at him and says, you know, I don't know. I think we both have to find out. Sends over a messenger to Reb Zisi. Reb Zisi comes again to the Magid of Mezrich. They get together in the room. And the Magid looks at him and says, what happened with the 30 rubles? Reb Zisi looks at him and says, what's Rabbi talking about? He says, don't fool me, Reb Zisi. What happened with the 30 rubles? Reb Zisi says, when I was giving back the money, my Yetzer Hara was saying to me, wow, Reb Zisi, you're such a tzaddik. I can't believe how big of a tzaddik you are. And when I went and I exchanged the money, it said, Yitzhar said, unbelievable, Reb Zisi, you're an unbelievable tzaddik. And I kept saying to him, shush, Yitzhar, anybody would do this. This is a simple thing to do. This is the pasha thing to do. Stop calling me a tzaddik. I'm not any better than anybody else. And then when they were counting out the money in front of the woman, the Yitzhahara clapped me on the back while the other people were clapping me on the back. And the Yitzhahara said to me, Rav Zusya, you're such a great tzaddik. Nobody has ever done a good deed like this in their entire lives. And Rav Zusya said, I couldn't take the Yitzhahara anymore. And I said to the Yitzhahara, listen to me, Mr. Yitzhahara. You want your money? You want your schar? You want to call me a tzaddik? Let's see what you think of me now. And he put the 30 rubles in his pocket. Put it in his pocket. And they yelled at him. And when they called him a Russia, the Yitzhahara is sitting there, no! Give back the money! What are you doing? What's wrong with you? Be a tzaddik! Rav Zusya said, no. Absolutely not. You know, there's no ending to the story. The Maggid of Mezrich did not give him any more money. And it doesn't say how he ended up marrying off his daughters. There's no ending to that story. It doesn't go into it. Very interesting story. There's another story regarding what he did with his daughter's dress. There's other things. This is not in this world. You don't know what a Kaddish Baruch Hu wants since you get something. We're not on the level of Rav Zusya where the money that we get we're supposed to use immediately to pay back an almana and then possibly not make ourselves look like we're giving into the Yitzhahara. That's not our level. That's not even something we're shayach to. It's not something that anybody should even try. I don't want anybody going out and saying, hey, did you lose money? nothing like that happening. There's no shayach. No shayach is such a story. But the idea is that when a person gets something, when a person finds something, you have no idea what the test is. You have no idea whether there's an onesh involved in that little reward, in that little thing you have. It goes the other way as well. And that's what I really wanted to concentrate on. An onesh can really be the greatest thing that can ever happen to a person. And I think it's pashit, and I think everybody knows this, but it's something that everybody has to hear. The Gemara in Brachos says, you mevarech ala ra me'ein ala tova, mevarech ala tova me'ein ala ra. And Daf Samach Amud Aleph, it asks, Hechidani, what is hara mevarech ala ra me'ein ala tova? The Gemara says, shakol bidka ba'are. If there's a flood, that floods his entire ground, his entire field. His entire field is flooded. Even though it's good for you later on, because your field is going to be more fertile, and from now on you'll be able to grow better, but right now it's bad. Because right now you're not going to be able to plant everything, anything, and the plants that you have inside you are completely destroyed. And ala ra is bad, me'in ala tova. But there is a good thing involved. What's ala tova, me'in ala ra? Listen to the case. When it says, Hechi Dami, he says, you find a mitzi on the street. And the government wants to take all the mitzias that you find. So it's a tova because you found a mitzia. But it's ala ra because the government is going to want to take it from you. There's no similarity. By the field, it's definitely bad now. It's definitely good later. The tova is something that's definitely good now. Possibly there will be something bad later. What's the Gemara giving such an example for? There couldn't be an example that would be equal by both. You couldn't give an example that's both. And you make a tova metiv on that case as a metzia. I can understand why I'd make a tova metiv al metzia. It might get taken away from me. But I shall keep it. So of course I make a tova metiv. And it's more likely that I'm going to keep it. I'm not going to go around to the government saying, hey, look, I found a metzia. So it doesn't mean it's not a tova metiv. But mevarech ala ra, the Gemara had such a habamina that in a case where it's good later on, you wouldn't make a dina emes. You wouldn't make a bracha of dina emes. It might be good later on. It might even be a vada good later on, but it's not comparable. One has nothing to do with the other. The mevarech ala ra me'in ala tova is not like the mevarech ala tova me'in ala ra. The pshat is, in Olama Emes, we know there's no such thing as bad. There's no such thing as wrong. It may be an onesh, but it's only for our good. And it's pashit. We know this. It's a pashit thing. We know that there's no such thing as bad. There's no sheiches to bad in the Olama Emes. If that's true, then if it's good, then it's probably a great reward. The Gemara says, sure, there's an onish involved. But probably not. It's probably just good. The chiddush of the Gemara is that if it's bad, it's probably good. So there's a havamina, maybe I shouldn't make a dynamis. The chiddush is not ala tova mein ala ro. The chiddush is ala ro mein ala tova. That's the idea behind the Gemara. The Gemara is trying to tell you a good thing is mistama a good thing. But a bad thing is also a good thing. It's bade will be a good thing. You just don't see it yet. How do you see it? Your head can't be in this world. Your head has to be in Olam Haba. Your head has to be in the Olam Hamas. It's not shaykh when a person dies that a person can just think to himself, it's all for the good. I won't cry. I won't think anything bad. It's all for the good. You can't do it. It's not shaykh. It's not shaykh. You're going to cry because it is bad. It is bad. We see it as bad. Is it good? Yeah, it will be good. And when I go up to Shemayim, I'll be like, oh, now I understand and everything's... But it's bad right now. But if your head is in Olam HaEmes, it can take away from that bad. It can make the bad more manageable. If your head is going up there and you think to yourself, what does God want me to do over here? Then anything that's bad can really turn out for the best. If something happened that you didn't want to happen, something you say, I don't understand why this had to happen, you can say to yourself, you know what, in Olam HaEmes, there's a reason for it. Whether it's an onesh, or just for something that I need later on, I don't know, but it's there. The idea behind the swine flu is, it pops into my head, but you can't, it's not shaykh to be able to think of such a thing. If you're in the Beis Medrash, and your chavrusa leaves early, or your shir ends early, or your chavrusa comes late, or something happens, where are you? If you're in this world, then you think to yourself, well, I was tired anyway. So you go to sleep in the Beis Medrash. Well, I had homework to do. So you go do your homework. Well, I wasn't feeling so well anyway. Or, I knew I had to get something at Best Buy. Or, something else. There's always something to do. If your head's in Olam Hazeh, if your head's here, in this world, then of course, your chavrusa left, you have half hour, so what do I do with that half hour? I'll do whatever I need. I have stuff to do. And that's a half hour off a Seder. Or an hour off a Seder. Or whatever it is. But if your head's in Olam Haba, if your head's not in this world, if your head is only thinking what I can do for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there are levels of that. But just a tiny little bit of a level is understanding you have 3 hours of Seder. So if the Rebbe's not there, you do something with it. You don't fall asleep in the middle of Seder. You don't just use that time and you walk outside and do whatever you want with it. Except, what are you doing during breakfast? You need a 45-minute breakfast? You need an hour and 15 minutes of lunch? Do you need that time? Or can you say to yourself, well, there's got to be other things that I can figure out, that I can do this other times. It can't be that it has to be right now. You know, when I first came here, I said to myself, I can't believe the schedule here. They have to go straight from morning Seder. There's only an hour break. And then there's afternoon Seder. And then there's college the whole late afternoon. Then there's night Seder. How can a person take it? Then I realized, there's no classes in the late afternoon. What does a person have? An hour and a half? What are you doing? What is going on during that time? From 4:30 to 9:15, what is happening? What are people doing? And then when a person doesn't come at 9:15, you had one class, maybe two. How much homework can there possibly be? How much could you possibly have to do? And maybe there is. And maybe there is stuff that you have to do during that time. But if you're finding yourself wasting an hour on anything else, then that hour should have been night Seder. That hour should have been that 9:15 to 10:15 slot. Or at least during the night Seder of the high school. To at least make it up. But we're talking hours here. Hours. What happened to them? How many movies could you possibly watch? What else is out there? There has to be a point where you say to yourself, what am I doing? From 4:15 on, what time do I go to sleep? If I go to sleep at 12, that's how many hours? To do what? To do what? And it could be, there's unbelievable amounts of things to do. So you got to manage your time better. You have to put your things together. Yes, you need a break. Without a question, you need a break. You might need 2-3 hours for a break. But not 8. Not 8. It hits me so hard when things like that happen. And yes, there's work. And yes, there's everything happens. That's if you're in Olam Hazeh. If you're in Olam Haba, you just think, how I can get myself to the next Seder. And during the Seder, to waste a half hour... to sit there for an hour and to, I just for a guy to go to the bathroom in the middle of a Seder is a bother to me. I realize it's a reality and that a person has to do it. But for a person to say, I got to go to the bathroom, and then come back a half hour later, is a shocker. You only get 3 hours. That's a sixth. If anybody's a great mathematician, that's a sixth. A sixth of the time that you had is wasted. Gone. You can't even think Torah thoughts down there, and I'm sure you're not. You're not even thinking Torah thoughts in here, let alone down there. It's a shocker. It hits me so hard. And from then, for a person to come late, I'm not even talking. It's reality that people come late. It's a reality that people come late. It's a reality that people want to leave early. It's because we're too ingrained into this world. We're here. Olam Haba means to look at something bad and say it's good. Oh, my chavrus is not here. That's great because I had to catch up on Shnai Mikra V'Afatarim. Oh, my Rebbe's not giving shir today. That's great because I really wanted to do a certain halacha. I wanted to figure out what in the world the halacha is by Chadash. There we go. Right first. I wanted to figure out why this sort of a thing happens. I've always had this question. I wanted to look it up. Oh, I just wanted to start Daf Yomi. It works out perfectly now. To use that time. Forget about the extra time for now. But at least the time that you have. And not, how do I get out of Seder 15 minutes early? But rather, how do I stay in Seder an extra 15 minutes? How do I make sure that the learning is done in the best way possible? I will compliment you now, because I'm not going to end this off on a low note. Davening has been absolutely unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. It's been the best davening that we've had here in a long, long time. The amount of people that have been coming, and the way people have davened, is extremely different. Rabbi Freeman came up to me the other day and he said, it's the first time that I've seen more jackets than I've seen tallis in a long time in the Beis Medrash. It's not to be compared to. Not to be compared to. It's only going up and it seems to be on a certain... It's moving up in a certain way. The davening has been absolutely great and people have davened with kavanah. It seems to be much, much better. So the next part. The next part is the learning. What are you going to do with that? Where are your heads? Where do your heads want you to be? That's what we have to work on. We have to work on Seder and work with other people. If you see a guy eating breakfast and he didn't go to Halacha Seder and he's still late to Seder in the morning, it's impressive. And a person has to go up to that person and say, let's go to Seder. Let's go to Seder. Why are you here? I have no idea why the computer room is open before 4 o'clock. I don't know, maybe from 12:30 to 1:45. I have no idea what that thing is doing open. What is there to look at? The flu is spreading. It's all over the place. Swine flu. What else is there? Is there anything else going on? Like they're making up news. They have nothing else to do. It's like we saw a pig. That's all they're doing. A Bulls game, maybe. Maybe if it goes into quadruple overtime is something to pay attention to. But anything, it's just... It gets out there. A person has to think where their heads want to be, where you want to be. We'll end with that, guys. Everybody should be good. Nadav and Aviv were purely in Shemayim. And that's why they died. The Korvasam al Hashem, Lifnei Hashem Vayimusu. They were too close to God and they died. We're not going to be on that level. Just a bit below. Let's be Karov. Karov is good. We'll stop with that. Have a good Shabbos.